Welcome, Dumbheads, to this week's Megasode of MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. Monday through Saturday, I drop one episode per day, identifying the dumbest thing on every single goddamn page of Heroes Unlimited, the gloriously ramshackle superhero RPG from Palladium Books. On Sundays, I combine all the week's previous episodes in one Megasode, like this one. If you'd like to play along at home, we're reading Heroes Unlimited Revised 2nd Edition, 2nd Printing, from December 1998. Today we're discussing page 312 of Heroes Unlimited. We're in the Super Psionic Abilities section, and these abilities are pretty damn super, I gotta say. As we're ticking through them, we've got some good stuff. We talked about hydrokinesis yesterday. We didn't really talk about some other good powers: invisible haze, hypnotic suggestion, insert memory. I'm a big fan of memory manipulation in role-playing games. A very powerful ability. And today we're on to mental illusion, which technically started on the last page, but most of the rules text is here. The details of mental illusion are the dumbest thing on this page, in a good way, for a simple reason. Here's how it works. This is not like your standard illusion power, where you decide, yeah, I want to create a brick wall in front of me so that they think that it's a dead end in the alley, or let me create an illusion of a giant robot so they don't realize they're up against a psychic. It's not like that. Nothing appears in the objective world. Instead, you create illusions in the minds of everyone who's observing you. And those illusions are based in the minds of your foes. Quote, this power is an incredible psionic hypnotic suggestion that causes the victim to see, hear, feel, and interact with an illusionary being. This being can be a horrible attacking monster, friend, family member, a seductive woman, or anything in between. No mention is made of a seductive man because this power is based on imagination, and who can imagine a seductive man, right? I mean, we're all 100% heterosexual dudes here, presumes Kevin Sambita. Only the character you target sees the illusion and feels the illusion, and they see and feel exactly what they expect. You just have to guide their imagination with the words you say. Quote, to instill the mental illusion, the psychic must implant some basic ideas and imagery. For example, quote, don't take my word for it. Your own comrade, insert name of person, has joined me. He'll explain everything, won't you, my friend? Or, you fool, even the great, insert name of hero, villain, friend, or family member, serves me. Oppose me, and you must face him slash her first. Defend me, so-and-so. The book can't get enough of giving examples. Quote, if a monster, the psychic might say, suffer now at the hands of my Balrog demon servant, or troll, dragon, or any monster. It will tear you and your friends apart. Die. That's the dumbest thing on this page. You gotta do this like comic book exposition talk, like from the 60s, where it's never enough to do something. You also gotta describe it in flowery language. You also gotta, like, in the most dramatic way possible, describe what is happening right in front of the person's fucking face. Otherwise, it's just not real, right? It's like back in the 1960s Fantastic Four, Dr. Doom could never just do a thing. Dr. Doom, constitutionally incapable of just doing a thing. Motherfucker's got a gun built into his finger. A concealed weapon, mind you. Does he ever just shoot someone with his finger gun? No, he does not. You don't know Doom. He points at them, and he shoots them, but at the same time, simultaneously, he's like, behold, I am shooting you with my finger gun. Because back then, comic book writers apparently didn't realize that comic books had art. This is a thing that doesn't really happen in role-playing games, right? Because we're all doing this, like, meta conversation about what's happening in the game all the time, so there's no need to have our characters describe what they're doing. But this power brings it back. This power demands that you bring the same hacky dialogue to the table that actually exists in old-fashioned comic books and have your character describe what their illusionary beast or seductive woman or whatever is doing. Because this then spurs the imagination of the victim, who imagines something based on what you described. A limitation of this power that's listed is that the thing you describe, it looks the way that the person would imagine it to look. So, like, if you say, haha, behold my troll servant. My troll servant is coming toward you with the intent of consuming your very flesh with his giant hands that are so strong and inescapable. You could never struggle out of them. Even though you're very strong, he's still stronger than you, behold. You're really trying to, like, put some English on that illusion. Even though you do that, what this person is seeing, what the target is seeing, is what they imagine a troll to be, sparked by your verbal description. And that's described as a weakness because, you know, two different superheroes you're fighting are going to see different things. They're going to see a different troll. So if they start to compare notes, like, watch out, he's got you in his pincers. And then Captain Justice is like, what fucking pincers? It's a troll. And the other guy's like, don't trolls have pincers? aren't they like some kind of mutant underground? Then they're going to realize they're both seeing different things and then maybe like the jig is up. But I consider this to be a strength. This is actually much better than regular illusions because if you use an illusion that you control all the details, it's hard to get it right, especially if it's something that this person would know about or if you want to have a specific emotional effect on them. Like making an illusion of somebody's mom, is somebody else writing dialogue for your mom trying to like show what your mom's face would do if you said a certain thing? Forget it. Like you're fooling nobody. On the other hand here, behold, I have captive your mom. She's going to be pretty pissed if you don't give up to me right now. That's like a cue that instantly the victim's mind will supply all the details of like what your mom's face would look like if she gave you a look like, I always kind of knew you were going to mess up this crime fighting thing. Like everybody can supply that look on their mom's face. So you're really benefiting from that as an illusionist, or even if it isn't someone they know, right? If you want to create a monster that is scary to them, their brain can do that much more readily than you can with your, you know, design powers. It's hard to make a scary monster, but everybody can summon from the depths of their subconscious something that scares them. Likewise, a seductive woman, or, you know, hey, let's not be strict constructionists, a seductive human being. I think any one of you in the listening audience would have maybe a difficult time like writing a short story for me that would describe a seductive woman. But if I try to imagine a seductive woman, it's like right there. This does not take a tremendous imagination. Like I know what I'm into. Everybody knows what they're into, at least on a subconscious level. So trying to seduce somebody with an illusion, this is the fucking power you want. The only tricky part is that you have to verbally describe the person. So that's like tough supervillain dialogue. It's kind of off book. It's like, behold, I've brought a sexy lady. She wants to meet you. Behold, a fireman responding to the crisis we have created with our superhero fight. Boy, he sure seems interested in you. And look at that puppy he's holding. It's like slightly flimsy. It doesn't sound like Dr. Doom. So maybe that's like a tip off. But assuming that doesn't give it away, that sexy lady or that fireman, it's going to be a pretty effective seductive illusion compared to whatever you would come up with out of whole cloth. Like the woman that Dr. Doom would imagine for me, like from his imagination, I'll tell you right now, I'm not fucking interested. Dr. Doom is many things, but he's no matchmaker. So this is the dumbest thing on this page. This thing where you have to like stridently declare the thing you are seeing before your eyes. It's such a comic book thing. And bringing it into the realm of comic book role-playing is so dumb and yet so perfect. I really like this power. Very effective, very cool. It's going to lead to goofy scenes, which I think is the best you can hope for from Heroes Unlimited in many cases. So I approve. Today we're discussing page 313 of Heroes Unlimited. And what I bring to you today is no less than a perfect diamond. This is a rare find. It is the product of years and years of palladium rules deposited in layers in the geological fashion, combined under the pressure of actual play and the fevered imagination of Kevin Sambita and others to produce this perfect diamond of nonsense. This perfect diamond occurs in the Super Psionic Powers, which is the section we're still in, and it is Psy Shield. Now, if you're a Rifts player, you may be thinking, what's wrong with Psy Shield? It's a perfectly straightforward psionic power. You have, of course, the Psy Sword, the signature psionic power of the Cyber Knight. The Psy Sword is kind of like a psionic lightsaber type thing. Also kind of a smite evil. It's from Rifts where you don't just play a paladin, you play a cyber paladin because it's the future, but it's still the fucking 90s. And if you're going to have a Psy Sword, naturally, you got to have a Psy Shield. And the Psy Shield is a shield, like a regular kite shield, except it's made of psychic energy, and you form it on your arm, and you go do battle, right? Against dragons or mecha or whatever. In its context, the context of Rifts, the context of the larger Megaverse, sure, Psy Shield is fine. It's a perfectly cromulent power. Here, though, in Heroes Unlimited, it is the perfect example of what I've been talking about throughout this section, which is that these are rules concepts that have been cut and pasted into Heroes Unlimited so disconnected from this game that if you just owned this book, as please recall, I did for a while when I was a kid. I eventually got Rifts, but for a while I had Heroes Unlimited and not Rifts, and I never got into Palladium Fantasy. If you just have this book, Psy Shield, like there's almost not one sentence of it that can be used. Virtually the entire usefulness and logic of this power has to come from reading other Palladium books or doing your own research online or going to the Palladium forums and trying to figure out what other fans have created to patch it. It's a whole power of things that aren't in this book. Let's start from the beginning. Okay, it's a psi shield. The range is yourself. It costs 30 ISP. It lasts for 5 minutes per level of experience. Pretty pricey. And there is no save. So far, so good. We know how to turn on this power. The question now is, what does it do? And here's the answer. Please listen to this with the ears of, 12-year-old Chris trying to figure out how this game works. Quote, a companion power to the Psi Sword, in which the psionic can create an energy shield out of thin air. The shield can be used to parry all hand-to-hand combat attacks, including attacks from dragons, golems, and magic. Even magic fireballs and dragon's breath cannot damage or penetrate the shield. The shield can be used to parry energy blasts and projectiles, but at -3. So that's the whole power, and let's just run it down. First of all, there are not actually shield rules in this game. So I don't know how you use a shield. Already, beginning of sentence two, like once we're past the concept of you can create a shield, already we're out in uncharted territory as far as Heroes Unlimited is concerned. Shields aren't really a thing in Heroes Unlimited. And understandably so, because why would you use a shield? You get an automatic parry with whatever weapon you're using, or your bare hands. And for the most part, you can parry whatever. I mean, you need some kind of weapon to parry other weapons, but it hardly matters what you use. So already, as soon as we're talking about shields, this is not supported by Heroes Unlimited. But let's continue on. What do we know about this shield? You can use it to parry all hand-to-hand combat attacks, including attacks from dragons, golems, and magic. Hey, thanks, game. Does this game include golems? No, it does not. Does this game include dragons? No, it does not. You can parry magic with this shield, apparently. Even magic fireballs. Now, spoilers for the magic section. A fireball is a spell that in Palladium has no saving throw, but it does permit a dodge. A dodge at a specific level. You have to hit an 18 or better to dodge a fireball. There's no parry option listed. Maybe that's different for shields? I don't know. There aren't any shield rules. So is this like a standard parry, but then you've got to hit an 18 with your parry? I guess so. Is that an automatic parry? Does that count? If you're like holding a shield in front of you, is that an automatic parry, or do you have to spend an action on that? Who knows? No shield rules. You can also parry Dragon's Breath, which, first of all, when we're at the point of parrying breath, I think you got to reconsider your combat system. Like, the Boxing Fairy hit this system hard, as we all know, and we've kind of grown to accept that we live in this fucked up world of Palladium combat. But when you're like knocking aside Gouts of Flame, because that's how boxers do, then, you fucked up somewhere along the way. This combat system doesn't work. And complicating it with shields versus fire blast attacks doesn't help matters. So how do you solve this problem? Well, good news, you don't, because there aren't dragons. And as for golems, I don't know what to tell you. More on this in the magic section, but suffice it to say, this game doesn't have golems in it, and it doesn't even almost have golems in it. And if it did have golems in it, I'm not sure there would be a normal rule against parrying their attacks. So I think this may be like a rare triple-decker bullshit sandwich where we have a rule for a creature that doesn't exist, applying to a rule system that doesn't exist, attached to a specific rule that if that rule system existed, that rule wouldn't be in it. There aren't golems, but if there were, you could box them just like anybody else. You'll also be excited to learn that your psionic shield can parry energy blasts and projectiles, but at a -3 penalty. Now, as far as I can tell, there is no rule against parrying projectiles with your full parry bonus, so it may be that parrying with the psi shield is actually worse than parrying with, like, your bare hands or a conventional weapon. Or not. I mean, who knows how shields work? There are no shield rules. What I do know is this. The conventional wisdom seems to be that the way shields are supposed to work is that you hold them over your body, and rather than rolling a parry, you use them as cover, and you use the cover rules. Now, I'm sad to report that there are no cover rules. However, there are called shot rules, and called shot rules would presumably allow you to get around cover if there were cover rules. So what fans have deduced is that you use a shield, you hold it up as cover. Getting around cover requires using the called shot rules. Now, if we could just agree on some called shot rules, we'd really be getting somewhere. But you know what? Take your pick. There's like four different contradictory called shot rules in this book. Fortunately, fans, each of them have taken the part of the elephant that they can touch in the blindness that we all live in this strange world. And one of them feels the trunk and says, oh, hey, these are the called shot rules. Let me use these as makeshift cover rules and apply these cover rules as makeshift shield rules. All of this comes from the internet. All of this comes from trolling around on the Palladium forums, trying to see how other people have played these rules. None of it comes from the book, which has not deigned to provide any of these like multiple redundant fail-safes to try to make these rules work. The dumbest thing on this page, quite simply, and this is going to be a short episode, this is an entire power From start to finish, it applies to rules and concepts that are not in this book. It is pure concept. It is like a picture of a guy with a shield would have been equally as useful and instructive as these rules, because that's all that it gives you. Hey, you can create a psionic shield. How about? That's it. That's the value of this content. And then, you know, you figure it out, Mr. Big Brain, Mr. Psychic. Can you parry a golem with it? What even is a golem? These are questions for you to answer at your table. Kevin Sambita is not going to come knocking at your door, busting it down, telling you that you're playing wrong. He's also not going to appear in a book that you paid for and tell you how to play right or play at all. He's not going to show up. Look, don't spend your life waiting for Kevin Sambita. He's not coming. You want to play a superhero, you fucking figure it out. Unless you think that I'm just going to like trash the game completely on this page, let me say, like, by way of a sort of backhanded compliment here, I could absolutely use PsyShield as written in my campaign by using the really quality work done to try to salvage it and try to connect all the dots from across Palladium's various game lines by fans on the internet. Palladium fans, God bless them, have really dedicated themselves to playing this unplayable goddamn game. And if you go online, what you will find around the trash fire that is this game is a circle of intrepid hobos who are making stone soup, and PsyShield is just the perfect example. It is a power that not one bit of it works. Not one bit of it works for Heroes Unlimited, but somehow fans of the game have really pulled together around these absolutely useless rules and created something that I could just about run. The question is why I would actually buy Heroes Unlimited when all of the useful work here has been done by good-hearted strangers trying to make Heroes Unlimited work. You don't actually need the original rules text. And by the way, yes, I know that this game has a weapon proficiency shield. The fact that Heroes Unlimited says it has shield rules does not mean that it does have shield rules. If you look at those, all they do is give you a bonus to parry, just like any old bullshit weapon proficiency, pretty much exactly the same as the rules for wielding, let's say, a chair leg or a mop or some other improvised weapon. It's a thing you hold that you can use to do stuff. That's as far as the shield rules go. Oh, and by the way, speaking of random shit you could just grab and use to fight off a golem, should one start to exist at some point in the future, like a mop or a chair leg, what would be the advantage of using a psi shield over a regular shield? Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I see here that even magic fireballs and dragon's breath cannot damage the psi shield. Do attacks normally damage things when they're used to parry? No, in fact, they do not. So what are you getting for your 30 ISP here? Mechanically speaking, a mop. And if you're seeing a lot of success using a psi shield in your campaign, more power to you. Just know that to the extent that a psi shield is any better than a psi mop or a psi chair leg, it is purely your doing. Those rules may come from somewhere, but they don't come from this fucking book, that's for sure. Today we're discussing page 314 of Heroes Unlimited. We're at the end of the psionics section, thank God. I don't like this section. I mean, there are sections of this game that are pretty good, and there are sections of this game that are pretty bad, but they're good podcasting. This is a section of the game that was really a slog to get through, and it's because of the approach to this section that the authors took. And fortunately for me, it is really exemplified by a little detail on this page. You may have noticed that the Instagram has been pretty much fallow lately. Partly that is because I have a new baby, so making fun of superhero costumes is now only my second priority in life. But it's partly because there just hasn't been a lot of art in this book in this last section. In keeping with the overall boringness of the psionic section, there's just not much art. But there's a little bit of art on this page, and it connects to a specific super psionic power here on the last page of super psionic powers, telekinetic force field. Telekinetic force field is a perfectly dull little power. It allows you to create a force field which defends you. Here are the rules, in part. And please bear with me as I read them with all of the verve and enthusiasm that they deserve. Quote, the psychic can instantly erect a force field around himself or others in the blink of an eye. If the creation of the force field is to parry an attack, the psionic must roll a successful parry to see if he was able to create the field before the attack strikes. A successful parry means the force field beat the attacker's strike and it absorbs the damage. The force field can be made so that it encircles its creator or as large as a 10-foot, 3-meter area per level of experience. It can be created up to 15 yards/meters away, but always within the line of vision. The smallest force field possible covers about a 3-foot area, 0.9 meters. You can practically see it crackling to life on the page, can't you? Can't you just see, like, those Kirby dots, the wavy lines coming out of the psychic's head? Can't you just see the speeding car colliding with the psionic force field? No, you fucking can't see that shit. All you can see is numbers. All you can see is numbers in feet, and then in parentheses, numbers in meters. Because that's all the author cared about here. This is brass tacks. This is like, you bring the imagination, we'll bring the fucking metric conversion. That is the style of writing on display here. A detail you may have missed in all the excitement is that these rules do in fact get pedantic enough to describe the shapes and forms in which you can create this force field. It can encircle the creator, it can be as large as a 10-foot area per level of experience, and it can be as small as a 3-foot area. The rules go on to say, quote, people may be able to move around inside a force field, but the force field itself cannot be moved. The field is actually an airtight force bubble. So what we know about this is you can create it on yourself, you can create it on someone else, it can expand to a certain area depending on your level, it can get as small as a 3-foot area, and it is an airtight bubble, but you can move around inside the constraints of the bubble. Above this power, we find an illustration of a generic woman holding out her hands doing psychic hands, and she has created a sort of semi-sphere, a sort of psychic gigantic contact lens of force field in front of her. And it looks like maybe there's some kind of attack bouncing off that shield, but honestly, the illustration is too small to see. This is a use of force field that can't be done with this power on this page. What is illustrated is impossible, because this illustration doesn't belong here, just like this power doesn't belong here, just like none of this belongs here. Here's my overview of the psionic section. These are rules from other games. These are rules that take all of their, not only in many cases, rules content, not only their logic from other games, but also their flavor from other games. Like, there's a Psi-Sword in this section, but that's for Cyber Knights. It's for, like, badass cybernetic paladin warriors who fight dragons and mecha in the post-apocalypse. But none of that is in this game, just the Psi-Sword. Likewise, this picture isn't for Heroes Unlimited. It's for something else. It's for a totally other power. Telekinetic Force Field. Not for Heroes Unlimited. It's for some other game. It's for another game where psionics are flavorful. It's for Rifts where there are mind melters and psi healers and dog boys. It's for other games where psionics are fun. All of that rules content, though, was stripped of all its flavor, or in some cases, the flavor was just left in to make the reader scratch their head and not know what the author is talking about, and it was just plopped right into Heroes Unlimited, where it has no particular connection to any kind of, like, fun. I mean, there are only really two types of psionic characters in Heroes Unlimited. The natural psychic, who is a powerful generic psychic, and the latent psychic, who is a weak generic psychic. These powers are organized as, you know, healing versus sensitive versus physical, but there's not really any division except a very arbitrary random one in who gets which powers. There aren't really themed psychics, at least not supported by the game. You know, if you want, you can try to pick powers that fit together, but there's nothing here. The best powers in this section are the ones that manage to maintain their flavor, that manage to still have an identity. We talked about biomanipulation. The evil eye is just a fun power. It's fun to be able to give people the evil eye. Invisible haze, where you psychically make yourself invisible, like the shadow. That's cool. It's a cool power. It doesn't need context. I mean, they're dumb, but the ectoplasm powers feel like silly, spooky shit, which I think is what you're looking for from a psionic character in this context. Those powers, though, they work accidentally. They work because they happen to have a flavor that survives the translation process from other games. For the most part, I think that pretty much this entire section, part of the reason it's been such a pain in the ass to podcast about, frankly, is that it was simply uncritically cut and pasted from other games. Doesn't really have anything to do with Heroes Unlimited. And I have a real hard time imagining that anybody was excited about this. I don't think anybody who put this section together gave a damn about psychics as superheroes, and it really shows. These powers, for the most part, they work, I mean, because they are bland, because there's really nothing interesting about them. They are just numbers on a page. When you compare to the amazing fucking superpowers we got, when you compare to spin at high velocity, clock manipulation, gem powers, vibration, tentacles, chameleon, adhesion, body weapons, bio ghost. Compared to that, this is page after page of paint by numbers. This is page after page of a bland, almost TV tropes-like cataloging of common psychic shit that you see everywhere, and boring rules for same. And the technically dumbest thing on this page, the fact that this illustration, one of only about four generic-ass illustrations in this whole section, explicitly does not fit the thing it is illustrating. Like, the rules text specifically says you can't do this thing, and then there's a picture of some chick doing it. That just shows, like, really nobody gave a damn. I've often talked about, like, Palladium being at its best when it is its most imaginative and enthusiastic. I know there are other games where the author gave a damn about psionics, but Heroes Unlimited is not one of them. And the fact that this illustration is so lazy really shows this section is just an afterthought. To continue this trend of, like, backhanded compliments to Palladium, let me just say, the psionic section is probably the section of this book so far with the soundest rules. probably the section with the fewest glaring errors, bad editing, nonsensical rules concepts, and it's still one of the worst. Making a good role-playing game really depends on good rules, but making a fun role-playing game really does not. And this section exemplifies that. Today we're discussing page 315 of Heroes Unlimited. We're beginning a section boldly entitled Magic Explained. There's a big logo atop the cross of the page, Magic Explained. Pretty much you're probably looking for spells, but what you'll also find here is rules for spell casting, you know, saves, how many melee actions it takes to cast different spells, potential psychic energy, which is the resource that fuels spells, how to gain it, how to regain it, how many are in a chicken, etc., etc. But before we can talk about any of that, we need to answer the author's burning questions about magic. As you may know, magic is something that was not always a part of Heroes Unlimited. The author felt uneasy with magic in a superhero setting, and you can really see that unease developing on this page. As I think we may have alluded to back in the magic power category, it really seems like the author has hang-ups about, like, why doesn't everybody use magic if it's based on, you know, magic words that you say and just intention? You know, what is magic? Like, does it come from specific supernatural beings? Or is it just a sort of fact of the universe that everybody can take advantage of? If magic is real in a modern setting, then why are there not, like, magic shops, right? Unlike having wings or being a lizard alien, magic is a thing you can theoretically learn. So why is magic not a thing you can take in college? Basically, given that we have this, like, modern superhero world, how do we fit magic into it without magic totally throwing it off the tracks? Now, I'm not really picky enough about this sort of thing to demand great answers to these questions, but I'm in the happy position, as happens from time to time, of reporting to you that the dumbest thing on this page is also the best thing on this page, because, you know, many games and many authors have tread this ground before, trying to figure out how to make magic make sense while still seeming mysterious and exotic and powerful. And this page nails it, I think maybe quite by accident, in a way that I've rarely seen. So let's give the full flavor here. Let's explain magic. Okay, first of all, first thing you need to know, right off the bat, magic is not real. Okay, guys, don't be trying to cast spells out of Heroes Unlimited, because number one, magic isn't real. Number two, if magic were real, if it were a powerful and dangerous and difficult practice, imagine how badly you would fuck it up if you tried to practice it according to the rules as written by Kevin Zambita. Just think about the damage you could do. So there's a whole reminder here about that. Quote, throughout this section, magic is treated as a real existing force, complete with theories and history. This is done for dramatic purposes. We must again express that Heroes Unlimited and the super abilities, psionics, and magic spells contained within are purely fictional works and have absolutely no bearing on the real world. The magic is not real! Exclamation point. So please bear that in mind. So that's the meta stuff out of the way. Now let's dive into the world. The first paragraph gives us the basic pitch of how magic fits into this world. Quote, magic is very real. It is a natural force that has existed since the dawn of time. On, in parentheses, Heroes Unlimited, Earth, it is possible that ancient humans, like the mysterious builders of Stonehenge, the pyramids, and other megaliths, understood magic and could perform great feats of magic. However, Earth humans lost the secrets of magic and turned to science. Over the generations, magic became a myth, an element in the pages of fantasy and science fiction, nothing more. Now, fortunately or unfortunately, this is not an episode of my upcoming daily podcast, Ars Backwards, where I go backwards page by page through Ars Magica and talk about the dumbest thing on every page of that venerable RPG. But suffice it to say here, I'm very dubious of the idea that humanity forgot about magic as it was embracing science. That's a weird trope, and I think especially a gaming trope, that just doesn't work for me. I expect some kind of, like, persecution of magicians, or, like, magic gets harder to do, or it's cut off for a while, or there's a deliberate attempt to kind of take it underground, or maybe the presence of technology interferes with its functioning, something like that. What I'm not comfortable with is the idea that, you know, the countryside is just strewn with magicians who can make magic carpets, as we'll see as a spell in this game. But then, you know, here comes industrialization, here comes the development of the train, and we laboriously lay track across the United States, flying on magic carpets as we go, and then, you know, the golden spike is driven, the continent is connected, and suddenly everybody's like, you know, fuck my flying carpet. Like, that's in the past. Those were the old days. And now everybody's got a magic carpet lying disused in some dusty corner of their house, like a mere bow flex. I don't think so. And it's not even that. This page posits that magic became a myth long ago, like long before industrialization. We're talking about like throwing over divination magic for the fucking astrolabe. Or like, well, fellas, time to tear down the teleportation obelisk. Now that the wheel and axle have been invented, we're going to have no trouble getting around. And similarly, I mean, technology aside, the practice of science per se as supplanting magic is silly because, as we know, there's a long tradition of scientists, from Isaac Newton to fucking ghost hunters, of scientists who would love to be able to pin things on religion or the supernatural, and who would definitely apply the scientific method to it. You know that if you could summon a shadow demon under controlled circumstances in a laboratory, you'd have scientists lined up around the block to study that shit throughout history. I mean, even now, like, that's a thing you could get a grant for. That's an easy pitch. That's a grant writer's dream. Like, so, to whom it may concern, demons are real. I can show you one. Maybe it will do our bidding, question mark? Please send me millions of dollars. Anyway, the rationale aside, this is the truth of the world as it is presented on this page. Magic used to be a big deal. Everybody used to know about it. But then technology came along. Humanity kicked magic to the curb. And now it's not practiced anymore. It's thought of as a myth. We need some mechanism here. We need some answer as to why this happened. Why technology and science, especially early technology and science, which were shit, would supplant magic, which is great. So far, magic remains unexplained, but give the author time. It's like paragraph 3. Now, in answer to our earlier question about whether magic is like a thing you call upon Dread Dormammu or the Vishanti to do, or whether it's just like a neutral resource, the author falls firmly in the latter camp. And in fact, the author is at pains to emphasize that magic is almost boring in its metaphysical neutrality. Quote, "Magic has become a sort of science that, through the various disciplines, is used to create, build, control the weather, summon, protect, enslave, and destroy. Like any resource, it can be used for good or evil, for the benefit of others, or pure selfishness, to build or destroy." To continue the spit polish on this scientific veneer, the rules go on to say, quote, "So-called, quote, magic energy is invisible, like a lot of forces of nature." Protesting too much, a little bit, I feel. Magic is totally real. I know you can't see it. You can't see gravity. Can you? Huh? Quote, "Parapsychologists of the 20th century, as fictionally recounted in Beyond the Supernatural, called this mystical force potential psychic energy." And then we go on to the whole ley line thing that we've talked about before. No need to get into it here. But magic is an energy that runs crisscross around the world, and you can tap into magic by standing on a ley line the same way that you can, you know, build your mill on a river and turn the water wheel and make your flour. It's just as boring as that. I don't know why it's so important to the author that magic is dull, but you'll, like, look at those quotation marks around the word magic. By this point in the page, the author has just about explained magic out of existence. It's just another force of nature, you know, it's just another one of the fundamental forces. You got your strong, your electromagnetic, your weak, your gravitational, and your spooky. Magic, right? Ley lines, they're just like magnetic fields. And so it makes sense that somewhere in the misty reaches of history, humanity abandoned the science of magic for the science of science. I guess under the mistaken belief that magnetic fields are cooler than dragon lines. Because other than that, shit's basically the same. After that, we get kind of a snapshot of the magical world of Heroes Unlimited as it is. Where is magic in the world today? Quote, "Many of the places of magic," here the game's referring to like ley lines and nexus points where ley lines cross, things like that. "Many of the places of magic are reputed to be inhabited by fairy folk, spirits, elementals, godlings, and dragons, or haunted by ghosts and wraiths, or plagued by monsters. Even in the world of Heroes Unlimited, where magic is not as powerful as on other Palladium worlds like Rift's Earth, the stories about magic and monsters persist. This is because demons, supernatural beings, and creatures of magic are attracted to places rich with mystic energy, like moths to a flame. Once on Earth, they quickly adapt to their new surroundings and begin to hunt, terrorize, enslave, or conquer those beings, like humans, who lack the power to defend themselves." So this is like an honorary dumb thing. This seems like as good a place to mention it as any. There's no antagonists section in Heroes Unlimited. Despite the humongous fatness of this book, there's nothing in here really with like enemies to fight or NPCs to put in your campaign. Once again, this is something that was in revised Heroes Unlimited that is missing here, and it hurts no one more than it hurts magic characters, because much of the identity of these characters is wrapped up in their interactions with these other beings. Now, I know, magic is like a science, so a wizard who wields magical energy with magical tools has nothing more inherently in common with a fairy than a physicist who wields magnet rays or whatever the fuck. But the reality is the feel of magic, the underground world of magic that you want for your character, really depends on all the things just listed here. But because we don't know anything about them, we're really no closer to understanding, like, what is it to play a wizard? You know, it's there's very little in this alleged explanation of magic that tells me anything other than magic is a thing and you know it. But that's about to change. Here's the dumbest and best thing on this page, because as I said, this is Heroes Unlimited is not unique in this regard. Many, many games have struggled with trying to explain magic, characterize magic, place magic in a world. But through all the different genres of gaming and fiction generally, you may have noticed a common thread about wizards. Wizards are assholes. Now, there are subtypes. You've got your pompous asshole, Doctor Strange. Unfeeling asshole, Dr. Fate. Child-endangering asshole, Dumbledore. One of many child-endangering assholes in the ranks of wizards throughout fiction. Merlin from Sword in the Stone, I'm looking at you. Gandalf, problem marijuana user asshole. Always fucking wandering off, never there when you think he's gonna be. Always taking you around to meet his dubious friends. Showing up out of nowhere. Oh shit, it's Gandalf the White. What happened, dude? I thought you were dead. Nah. I was just busy. Nice new clothes. Do you have any of that money you owe me? Look, man. Just because my family is luminous immortal beings doesn't mean I have your money. Anyway, he's an asshole. That's what I'm saying. And then you got your assholes straight up, like John Constantine. From these five or six examples, speaking of science, we can conclusively determine that all wizards are assholes. And it turns out, that's the answer to this question we keep butting up against. If magic is just like a science, why isn't it taught in school? Why don't people, like, it's so important and powerful. If it can be practiced by rote, if it can be trained and learned and standardized, why isn't everybody doing it? Why does it not have a bigger role in society? Why is it not known? Why is it underground? What is it that makes wizards rare and exotic and mysterious the way we need them to be for our wizard tropes to work? It's because you don't just have to learn from old spell books. You don't just have to find an ancient master or a supernatural mentor. You don't just have to harness the vast but ultimately predictable forces of magic that drive the Heroes Unlimited world. No. To truly become a wizard, you must pass your asshole exam. It's this asshole exam that cuts most people out of the equation. It's the reason that people don't commonly practice magic, that it isn't taught in schools, and that many people, in fact, don't believe in it, despite the fact that they can look up at any goddamn time of day and see people in underwear flying overhead. So how much of a stretch is it really? So what is this asshole test? Okay, first of all, bear in mind the following. This is under step 2, mental discipline. This is about how you learn magic. Quote, theoretically, anybody can learn magic. However, it is an extremely difficult process that proves to be impossible for most people. Okay, so number one, it's almost impossible. Number two, magic is very dangerous. Bear that in mind. Remember, it said above, the whole reason that there are even still stories and myths of magic is because demons, supernatural beings, and creatures of magic are drawn to any place that magic is found on Earth. And what they do when they get there is quickly adapt and start fucking hunting, terrorizing, and conquering. So not only is magic really hard to learn, but as soon as you start using it, it's like you got a shiny brand new car and the whole world is a real bad neighborhood and there's nowhere safe to park that shit. The only reason humanity even knows about demons is because demons are so fucking horny to come prey upon humanity via magic that wherever magic shows up, suddenly demons start popping up. Bearing that in mind, that it's virtually impossible and extremely dangerous, here is step one to become a wizard. Quote, the first step in becoming a practitioner of magic is believing that magic is real and that one can master the knowledge and skill to perform it. The individual must see magic as innate energy, a tool to be used, not feared. It goes on to say, quote, this must be 100% conviction. Any nuance of doubt or fear will destroy any chance of learning magic. So that's the asshole test. You have to be such a pompous douchebag that upon discovering magic is real, which is not so hard to believe in this world of superheroes, but that it is virtually impossible for anyone to learn and exceedingly dangerous, your reaction to that is 100%, yes, I can do that, I have nothing to fear. You hear from your ancient master, it is said that 1 in 1,000 mortal men can master the power of magic, ... if he is not consumed by demonic forces first. Who among you, and then you just step forward like, me, 100%, I can do it, it's me. No doubt in my mind, I'm the one. I am the 0.1% and I have nothing to fear because I am so great. That's the personality you need to be a wizard. And if you don't, that's the thing. If there is the slightest doubt in your mind that you can do this thing that almost no one can do, you can't do it. And remember, this is step one too. This is before you know shit about magic. You have not cast spell one at this point. You have just been contacted by your ancient master. You're fresh out of civilian life, still wearing your suit and hat, up on a mountain in Tibet or whatever. No spell knowledge, don't know shit about magic, and the ancient master is like, someday you will bend the very fabric of reality to your will. And you're like, hell yeah, I will. I know I will. And that's when the ancient master knows he's chosen correctly. You pass the asshole test. There's that fundamental force of nature that we were looking for before. It's strong, weak, gravity, electromagnetism, and the Dunning-Kruger effect. You got to be a dumb shit who's in over his head, but is nonetheless 100% certain, no nuance of fear or doubt, that he can fucking learn to bend the laws of physics and has nothing to fear from a cosmos full of violent demons who are horny for magic. You got to be that guy to be a wizard, which explains a whole lot about magic and explains a whole lot about wizards. As with the psionic section, I came into this thinking it was all going to be old hat and like, okay, fine, powers of the mind. But then I learned about, you know, if you're a psionic, then you are an outcast from dog society. You're gifted with mental powers, but cursed with dog hatred. And that made me want to play a psychic. Learning that this is an actual thing about wizards makes me want to play a wizard so bad. It makes me want to run a wizard campaign, honestly, or like a wizard subculture within a larger campaign, with the understanding that like wizardry is a beautiful spectrum and there are a million different kinds of wizards, but every one of them is this guy. Every one of them is this asshole. No wonder all their cults and guilds and stuff are such a fucking wreck. No wonder they live in towers to get away from other wizards. That's why. I tire of these beardy fools who think they are as good as me. I must build an edifice in the shape of my big swinging dick. Hide my awesomeness away from the world. Today we're discussing page 316 of Heroes Unlimited. We are in the Magic Explained section that is going to give us spells and stuff later on, but right now it's just running down the basics of how magic works in the world of Heroes Unlimited. Yesterday we learned about the asshole exam that you have to take to become a wizard, but arrogance, as it turns out, is not quite enough. You also need a resource to cast magic, potential psychic energy, which we've discussed on the podcast before. PPE is a very commonly used resource within the whole Palladium Megaverse, but in Heroes Unlimited, it's pretty much used exclusively by magic characters. This is new for Heroes Unlimited. Back in revised Heroes Unlimited, wizards cast a number of spells per day, like a Dungeons & Dragons wizard, but now it's PPE, the whole system is standardized with the other Palladium games, and PPE goes a long way, perhaps almost as far as shocking douchebaggery, toward defining what a wizard is. Because, like, with super abilities, that's just your own awesomeness, right? You put on the spandex because you have special powers. You don't rely on anybody else for those special powers. There's no particular limit to those special powers. You just have them and you use them. Psychics, as we talked about, are kind of like hooked into the larger setting because they have ISP, inner strength points, not internal strength points, as I am continually saying on the podcast. I know that is a frustrating error. It frustrates me too. I have to edit these episodes. But yeah, you've got inner strength points, and that's your own mojo, though. It's just that it's amplified if you go stand in one of, you know, the world's awesomest places to stand, like Stonehenge or the top of the Great Pyramid, especially at odd hours. Basically, if there's a place and a time where some guy in a uniform with a flashlight is going to find you and say, you need to come back tomorrow with a regularly scheduled tour group, that's a place you can stand and get vast psychic powers. But they're your psychic powers. They're just amplified. Magic-using characters are on a whole different level. Not only do they have their own mojo, their potential psychic energy, but that shit's transferable, so they can also draw in other people's mojo and use it to cast spells and perform rituals and so on. So PPE, a huge part of what makes a magic user distinct from other types of characters. And that's not just because of the concept of PPE, but also because of how you get it. So on this page, we get a little rundown. First of all, individual potential psychic energy. Kids have fairly a lot of it, like 5d6 points. Teenagers have lots and lots of it, 6d6 points. Like a whopping 21 potential psychic energy, because they're at that point in their lives when they still have choices to make and the potential to do something with their lives. Then once they become adults and they've kind of like settled into their routines and gotten married and had a family and really devoted a lot of their free time and creative potential to a daily podcast for some reason, then that potential psychic energy plummets. The average adult human has like 2d6 potential psychic energy, like 7 points of potential is how much an adult has. So the next time you see something on Twitter about how, like, 40 isn't too late to write a novel, just know. Sure, write your novel. You're working with 7 points, but it takes about 5 not to stay home from work every day and just eat Cheetos, so budget accordingly. But anyway, that's regular people. The rules go on to say that if you're a practitioner of magic, rather than squandering your potential psychic energy on work and family and skills, instead, you've harnessed it and multiplied it. You've really reinvested it in your own inflated sense of your own importance, and you're going to have 10 to 40 times as much potential psychic energy as a regular person. But even this may not be enough for you. If you really want to shake things up, if you really want to change the world and cast huge spells and keep up with invulnerable juggernauts and giant mecha, if you want to be so self-important that your ego is a fucking threat to national security, and they got to either recruit you to the Avengers or snipe your ass from a distance, then you need PPE from other sources. Now, you can get it from ley lines, you know, as we discussed, just like a psychic, you know, go sneak away from your Bible tour group to the plains of Megiddo and cast a spell at the stroke of midnight on a leap year. But, you know, that's not really sustainable. If I know pompous, ego-driven individuals, and I think that I do, the stroke of midnight every leap year is not enough for you. You need a sustainable, continuous source of power to back up your unshakable belief that you're better than everyone else. Fortunately for you, there are other ways to get PPE. If you can get your hands on one, a magical talisman or artifact would be a great way to do this. These are the enchanted objects and weapons that we talked about earlier in the magic power category. An enchanted object has an average of 160 PPE that recharges daily. So that's great if you can get it. Probably doubles your daily PPE budget. That's great if you can get it, which you can't. It's a separate power category from magic user. So unless your GM really lets you cheese out, like unless you get to play Doctor Strange and also steal the Helm of Naboo, then it's not happening. But if you can do it, by all means, like if you can kill a magic supervillain who's got an enchanted helmet and then loot that shit, go for it. Let a D&D game break out in your superhero campaign. Don't be too proud. The bodies may be brightly colored and in better shape, but that doesn't mean you can't fucking loot them. Option number two, the boring option, you can meditate just like a psychic. Speaking of D&D, this is the boring D&D way to get your PPE back once you've spent it. Every hour you meditate counts as an hour of sleep, and it gets you 10 PPE back. By contrast, actually sleeping gives you 5 PPE per hour back, so you should always meditate at night, not sleep. Not only is it more efficient, but it's a cool thing to brag about. I like to think that in the distant Middle-Earth-style fantasy past of Heroes Unlimited Earth, wizards picked up this trick from elves out of jealousy. There were a bunch of adventuring parties out there where the wizard is like, "Time to get our sleep before we continue on our journey, my boon companions." And the elf is like, "I do not sleep, I meditate." And the wizard is like, "Yeah, me too. Yeah, sleep is for mortals. I meditate as well." But yeah, meditation, it's a cool way to show off if you got to sleep around the rest of the party, but you don't want to use it to get your PPE back. It'll help you recharge, but it doesn't get you over your limit. So if you want to cast big spells that are beyond your reach normally, that's a non-starter. You can't like super meditate to pump yourself up. This brings us to other beings. You got to reach outside yourself to really pump yourself up with magical power. To real quick summarize the options, you can draw PPE from unaware people. You can do multiple people at a time, hit a radius out to 10 feet around you. They get a save. If they save, you only get 1d4 PPE. If they don't save, you can take up to half of their PPE. So that's an option. If someone knows and is willing to give up their PPE to you, then you can take up to 70% of it from one person or up to 50% from multiple people. But if you got more than 10 people all giving up the PPE, you got to do some kind of ritual. Like you got to do a dance or a seance or all pray or whatever, just to like focus all the attention on you, get everybody in the proper mindset of you being awesome. This technique will be familiar to anyone who knows the Trinity Broadcasting Network, the Christian channel on TV. A little bit of singing, a little bit of oratory, big fancy building, get everybody to sway all together, and just, you know, unify people around the central message of, how cool am I? How great is my suit? Today is a special day because you've come to see me, and Jesus. So yeah, you organize something like that, and you can have up to 50% of everybody's PPE, and they contribute it freely, and nobody makes their save, so you get that big influx of PPE. Or you can do a blood sacrifice where you kill a living creature and its PPE doubles and you get to take all of it. But number one, good characters will never do this to another person. If you're principled or scrupulous, you won't even do it to animals. Let me just point out, since we were talking about this with hydrokinesis the other day, this does mean you may be in a situation where you go to see a wizard about saving the world. You meet him at the Burger King and he's there chomping on a chicken sandwich. And he says, "Gee, I'd love to help you, but unfortunately my morals forbid me from killing chickens to fuel my magic, even in world-shaking circumstances. It's just not on. Chomp, chomp, chomp. Delicious chicken sandwich. What an asshole, as indeed he must be." But yeah, aside from the ethical problem, the other thing about blood sacrifices is, sure, it doubles the PPE you can get, and you can get all of it, so that's like 4 times what you could normally get from a person. But remember, you can draw from people out to like 10 feet times your level of experience, even if they don't know what the fuck is going on. And if you do like a big hand-holding kumbaya ceremony, you can reach out, I guess, an unlimited distance, as long as everybody's participating in the ritual. It's just a whole lot easier logistically to arrange 4 people to stand near you and sing than 1 person to kill on an altar. And I think the marginal difficulty just rises as you pump those numbers up. Blood sacrifice is not an infinitely scalable proposition for powering your magic. If you put an ad on Craigslist for people who want to be killed on an altar to fuel your next ritual, you may get a response or two. But as you're approaching the point where you need to kill 5, 6, 10, 15 people, putting an ad on Craigslist for like a prayer circle starts to seem like more and more of a better idea. You're going to catch smaller fish, but more of them. But speaking of fish, Here's the dumbest thing on this page. Of all the ways we've talked about to gain PPE, which are very flavorful and very much in keeping with what we want the wizard to be as a play experience, right? You could start a cult to get power from people willingly. You could go leech it off of people with your googly wizard eyes and drain the magic out of them. You could go sneak into some ancient ruins where you probably shouldn't be for cultural and safety reasons, like an asshole. Commit a blood sacrifice. Or, much more efficiently, you could buy some mice. Here's the thing. As we discussed, the average person only has like 7 PPE. That means if they willingly give up their magical mojo to you in a gigantic ain't I great ceremony, you get like 3 points. That's barely better than if you just take their magical mojo and they make their save. You get like 1d4 points. That's an average of 2.5. That's a half a point less. Now, granted, if you're like, let's say, a Christian rock guy and you draw a lot of awkward teenagers who are going to feel dumb about going to this concert in a few years and also weird about hooking up there, but they really learned something about themselves, then yeah, they've got more PPE. So maybe you're pulling like 10 from them if they give it up willingly. If you're an idol to Christian teens, which is like not the most common character concept, although it is perfect for an asshole. If you're just walking around among the teenagers like a creep and they get a save against you, now our average gain per teenager, since you only need like a 12 to save against magic, back down to around 5 points apiece. And you can only get so many teenagers all packed together in a place that a wizard could just wander around with his robes and beard and not get arrested. Note to self, principal of a high school would be an excellent cover slash character concept for a wizard, kind of an early series Buffy the Vampire Slayer vibe. Character should probably look like Armin Shimmerman. Putting that aside, for the typical character, doing giant rituals full of teenagers all the time is not practical, and even if it were, you're getting like 5 PPE apiece. You can only cram so many teenagers into a close area around you without making other people at the table uncomfortable at this role-playing session. My point is this. Animals have almost as much PPE as adult humans. I don't want to pre-talk this too much because it's coming up on another page, but there's a table later that talks about this. Some animals, like lions and wolves, have more PPE than a regular person, and even tiny animals, who no one cares about, like mice, have a D4. A rat has 2d4, which is only 2 lower than an adult human. And animals are -4 to save against magic. So if you're just going to walk around among people and drain their magic at random to charge yourself up, you're much better off doing this with animals than with people. And you can get more mice in a small area than you can get people. This is so much better than other ways of charging your PPE up. Why meditate? You get 10 PPE an hour from meditating. If you go, let's say, to the zoo, to an aviary with at least 7 birds, you can get 10 PPE in one action. That's like 2 seconds, maybe, as opposed to an hour of sitting at home contemplating the universe. And that's just the aviary. Go take a walk around the whole fucking zoo. If you're not quite feeling magical, if you're not quite feeling up to snuff, go visit the zoo. Say you live in San Francisco, a great place for a wizard to live, because it's a big city with exotic neighborhoods and a lot of flaky people and a high quotient of assholes. You go to the San Francisco Zoo. There's 2,000 animals there. Assuming for a moment that every animal at the San Francisco Zoo is a mouse or a bird, because I'll do anything to simplify my math for this podcast, that zoo is a resource of about 3,000 PPE. In reality, it would be much more, quote-unquote reality. On a real wizard trip to the San Francisco Zoo, you would net much more, but, you know, for our purposes here. Remember we were talking about, like, if you can get your hands on an artifact, a whole other power category worth of magic power, you can get 160 PPE per day from that thing. That's like 107 mice. Keep 107 mice in your house in a cage. This is a good reason to have a sanctum, among your many other reasons. The neighbors may not take kindly if you're keeping 107 mice in a small apartment. But, you know, assuming you've got a tower or a stately brownstone, keep 107 mice in one room. Go in there, sweep around the room, suck up the combined magical mojo of 107 mice. That's 160 PPE. That's as much as a fucking magical amulet gives you all day. Then release some ether into the room, knock out those mice, let them nap for 5 hours, ring the feeding bell, wake them back up, go back in, 160 more PPE. And we're throwing a lot of numbers around here that you don't have context for yet if you don't know these rules, but just keep in mind, that's 160 PPE from your 107 mice, and you can get more in 5 hours. By contrast, killing a grown-ass virgin on an altar in a blood sacrifice nets you like 42 PPE if they're a young virgin with lots of psychic potential intact, if they haven't chosen a major yet. What would you rather do every 5 hours? Visit your 107 mice or find 3 virgins at your local university? Because I went to university and I'll fucking tell you which I'd rather try to do. And I have a sneaking suspicion that the other players at the table may be comfortable with the mouse plan as well. And it's not just blood sacrifice either. I mean, because all that a cult does really is let you get 3 measly potential psychic energy from every person there. I mean, that's like a half point each better than just an animal, assuming the animal makes their save against you. any Svengali robe-wearing Anton LaVey looking motherfucker with a cult drawing on their combined magical mojo to power their dark rituals, any one of those guys, no better than someone who owns the same number of mice as the cult leader owns cultists. You could get a minor boost if you start killing your cult members, because you do get more PPE from killing a person than a mouse, but then again, mice are easier to restaff. It's a well-known principle of HR. So yeah, the fact that like owning lots of mice is by far the best way to power your magic as a wizard, much better than cults or blood sacrifice, that's the dumbest thing on this page. But that's all sustainable magic. Join me next time as we discuss the best and stupidest way to power one big spell, Nexus Point Rituals, on MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. Today we're discussing page 317 of Heroes Unlimited. This podcast episode is about ley lines and nexus points, places of magic in the Heroes Unlimited world. And because I'm a fancy motherfucker, this podcast episode has an epigraph. Over the generations, magic became a myth, an element in the pages of fantasy and science fiction, nothing more. Heroes Unlimited, revised second edition, page 315. All right, with that in mind, let's talk about what the hell is going on with spooky locations, aka Nexus Points, in the world of Heroes Unlimited. We've been talking about ways to gain potential psychic energy, which is the magical mojo that you use to power your spells when you're a wizard or whatever. Yesterday, we talked about ways to get PPE from other people, or to meditate to regain it from your own natural stores. But if you want to do one big effect, the way to do that is to draw magic energy from a ley line or Nexus Point, where multiple ley lines meet. These are not random locations on the map. These are places that anybody with access to a New Age bookstore could guess. Every country, town, and province has spooky locations. Nexus points are at spooky locations. Not necessarily scary, but like special. Timing is also an issue. If you go to a spooky location and there's not quite enough magical mojo there for you, you want to wait for a spooky time, like the equinox or the solstice. Now, you'll recall from pages ago, back on page 315, we talked a little about where Nexus points are. It said back then about ley lines, quote, "These invisible streams are called ley lines. Where two or more ley lines cross over each other is called a ley line nexus point, or energy junction. PPE is strongest at nexus points. Many, but far from all, nexus points and some ley lines have been marked with stone circles, giant totem poles, and towering standing stones known as megaliths to indicate places of power. Some places of power have also been seized by powerful practitioners of magic, clergy, creatures of magic, and demon lords who have built pyramids, towers, churches, temples, and secret lairs at or near a nexus or ley line." The indication here is there are so many nexus points, not even all the nexus points are marked by like standing stones or an ancient church or a pyramid or a tower or a castle. Just most of them are. So like any spooky location you're going to find in a tour book, seems likely it's going to be a nexus point. At first, this seems like good news for the enterprising crime-fighting wizard, because it means, you know, all I got to do is go try to fight crime in a neighborhood where there's like a historic church or an old totem pole, and that's a whole bunch of free PPE, right? But there are drawbacks. This page lists all the different times that you can go to hit up a spooky location for extra magical power, and each one of them lists risks associated with that time. See, those demon lords who are horny for magic that we talked about a couple pages ago, they fucking love to come through Nexus Points during spooky times. You got a spooky time at a spooky location, demons can't get enough of that shit. Neither can other extra-dimensional beings. So you're going to go there to get a bunch of extra magic to go fight the masters of evil or build yourself a wizard tower or whatever. Probably, awkwardly, you're going to bump into a bunch of other magical, powerful creatures, also milling around horny as shit for this magic, and you're going to have to work it out amongst yourselves. If you want to be safe, you can hit it at like a midday or a midnight. Not really going to have a rift open at those times. You get a little extra PPE. Any time spookier than that, and you are rolling the fucking dice, my friend. Let's say the equinox, right? Vernal or autumnal. Here's what it says. And I'm not going to run down all these. This is just by way of example. Quote, "Energy runs high during the daylight hours of the vernal equinox and the nighttime hours of the autumnal equinox. During this time, a mage may draw upon 20 PPE points per melee round, 15 seconds, at a nexus. This amount doubles to 40 points for 1 minute at dawn, noon, sunset, and midnight." So the spookiest of spooky times, the tip-top spookiest times, are 1 minute at dawn, noon, sunset, or midnight on, let's say, the autumnal equinox at a spooky location, like standing stones, some other megalith. Here's the drawback. Quote, "However, there is also a 1 to 10% chance that a dimensional portal or demonic monsters, 2d4 lesser demons, devils, elementals, or entities, or 1d4 greater beings will appear. Roll once at dawn, noon, the setting of the sun, and at midnight." That is a 10% chance that 5 regular demons or 1d4 greater beings are going to emerge from the standing stones 4 separate times on this one spooky day for each nexus point. That's a whole lot of supernatural activity. How much is it? I'm glad you asked. I did some math. Because this is bonkers when you think of it. Like, in the context of a session, like, hey, let's go do a Stonehenge session. Let's give the wizard some time in the spotlight. We're playing around, doing a ritual. It's midnight on the autumnal equinox at Stonehenge. Wizard's casting a ritual. What are the chances some kind of evil monster comes through? Maybe 10%. It's comic books. But when you expand that over this whole world that's supposed to exist, it's nuts. Consider just, forget ancient churches and temples and towers and stuff, just megalith sites in the UK, right? There are 62 of them according to Wikipedia, and I'm sure Wikipedia doesn't list all of them. Now, I did some research. According to Beyond the Supernatural, 90% of megaliths in the UK are nexus points. So that's 55 of those 62, rounding down. Let's say it's the autumnal equinox. Each one of those sites, those 55 sites, has a 10% chance to spit out demons, devils, elementals, entities, or greater beings four separate times that day. That means over a third of them should spit out monsters at some point during the day. Now keep in mind, this is just the equinox. This is not even the spookiest time of the year. Like, solstice is more spooky, therefore more demons. But let's just say equinox. On the equinox alone, mathematically, we should expect at least 90 demons to erupt in the UK, or elementals, or greater beings. 90 demons! And like, if you're on a tour of the UK, like, hey, let's go visit my family in Scotland, and while we're there, let's like check out some of these standing stones they got over there. If your visit happens to land on the equinox, there's like a one-third chance you're gonna see fucking demons bust through. Those are fucking good odds if you're a demon fan. That's like better than whale watching. You're gonna see some shit, probably. Visit a few of them. Or, you know, have a picnic, camp out. There's four chances every day to see demons. This is the dumbest thing in this page, and I'll tell you why. Quote, over the generations, magic became a myth, an element in the pages of fantasy and science fiction. Nothing more. Nothing more, motherfucker, they're coming out of the walls. Your local spooky location, wherever you live, every spooky day of the year, every equinox, every solstice, there's like a one-third chance for every single one of them that it's fucking pouring out demons into the neighborhood throughout history. Like, if you live in the UK near some standing stones, you're seeing demons come through on the regular. Like, it wouldn't even be a surprise to you. Lunar eclipse happens like once a year. Forget about it. Like, there's like a 50% chance of a giant fucking hole opening in the sky and demons pouring out at 55 convenient locations across the United Kingdom. But everybody just forgot magic existed. I guess until they actually see a demon come kill their family. And they're like, what the fuck happened here? And their neighbor, who is similarly grieving for their lost family, the lone survivor of their clan, is like, I bet it was those demons. Remember those demons that come from time to time? It's like, oh yeah, I forgot that every solstice demons rampage across our land. Oh yeah, magic is real. Damn it, why can't I ever keep it in my head that magic is real and invaders from another reality are constantly murdering and pillaging their way across our village because they're horny from magic? Fuck, I would have told grandma to lock the door. So anyway, yeah, like two pages later from telling us that people have forgotten magic exists, now we're on to, by all rights, there should be a local emergency number in every neighborhood for what to do in case of a demon invasion, because there are literally dozens of demons pouring out of holes in reality at all times across the world, at predictable points that you can spawn camp. So fortunately, you know, you can have your local sheriff do the occasional drive by the standing stones on the solstice and the equinox and so on, you know, just in case. If we could ever fucking remember that magic is real. So anyway, this is a risky but powerful way to pump up a spell if you're in need of a little extra magical mojo. It's very risky, demon prone, but still not my favorite evil way to get magic. Join me tomorrow when we discuss that evil wizard trick on MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. This has been Mega Dumbcast. New episodes drop every day except for Sundays, when all the previous week's episodes drop in one big chunk for your binging convenience. Contact or check out the show wherever you want. It is Mega Dumbcast on Twitter, Instagram, Podbean, your favorite podcatcher, etc., etc. And if you like my tiny little podcast, consider giving me a tiny bit of money at ko-fi.com/megadumb. That is ko-fi.com/megadumb. MDC, Palladium Books, Heroes Unlimited, and all associated trademarks are property of Kevin Sambita. This season's theme song is To the Top by Midair Machine, whose work you can find at freemusicarchive.org/music/askagain. That's ask again, two words with a space in between. Dumbheads, I will catch you next time.